ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut, it's Supercuts.
I know you guys have a lot in your minds these days, so you might have forgotten about a certain major holiday that happens the last Sunday of every October.
It's National Titan Day! It's a National Titan Day! Titans all over the league! Let's go with touchdowns!
That's right. I'm talking about National Titans Day.
The 49ers' George Kittle is an honorary co-founder of this special NFL celebration. And in the seventh week of this NFL season, the games were mostly not the type that could compete. There were upsets and drama aplenty, though. A Lions-Rams game of X's, Joe Burrow beating Lamar Jackson, and our Monday morning quarterback, Alex Smith, is here to break down this NFL Sunday. I'm Emily Kaplan, in for Pablo Torre. It's Monday, October 25th. This is ESPN Daily. Yesterday was the type of NFL Sunday where National Tight Ends Day actually rated as news. This novelty holiday began as a joke in the San Francisco 49ers locker room 3 years ago. It has morphed into one of the NFL's most random celebrations. But we'll recognize it in earnest, in part because the rest of the day was a bit of a snooze fest. The day's slate of games featured teams winning by an average of 20 points, which ranks top five for the most lopsided days in NFL history. And the late game on Sunday, where Indianapolis visited San Francisco, was played in the middle of a rainstorm.
It is windy and rainy here at Levi Stadium, and it's only going to get more wet and more windy as there's a 100% chance of rain.
Porta potties sliding through parking lot in pregame, fans wearing swimwear in the stands, the type of conditions which guaranteed sloppy play.
Surveying, escapes, and throws it right into the arms of Al Shire. Lost control of the ball, Nick Bosa created it.
The day's slate of games featured teams winning by an average of 20 points, which ranks top five for the most lopsided days in NFL history. The Colts, behind Carson Wentz, emerged victorious 30-18. And for the 49ers, a season that began with Super Bowl aspirations is beginning to spiral. What's more, it wasn't a memorable holiday for two of National Tight End Day's founding fathers. George Kittle, the 49ers' star tight end, remained sidelined with a nagging calf injury. Quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo posted yet another ugly outing. One touchdown, two interceptions, one for 11 on third downs, and this one seemed like an inflection point. Ever since San Francisco traded up for Trey Lance at last year's draft, it felt like the beginning of the end for Jimmy G. The coaching staff doesn't believe Lance is ready to take the reins yet, which means Garoppolo has been trotted out as a lame duck, and he's done nothing to seize the opportunity. It's hard to imagine the 49ers paying him his $24 million base salary next year. And the rest of this year for him looks like a slog to the finish. But beyond the near hurricane in Santa Clara, there were actual football surprises on this truly apt holiday. A spectacular one for tight ends, it turns out. And also one sprinkled with a few statement wins. So we'll break down the biggest stories in Sunday's games with our Monday morning quarterback, none other than Alex Smith, in just a moment.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Alex Smith, thank you for joining us.
Looking forward to it. Yeah.
You're looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. And Alex, the idiom says that you can't go home again, but Jared Goff was forced to as the Lions took on the LA Rams. And this, of course, is something that you experienced yourself in 2014 with the Chiefs returning to take on the 49ers. So how did the stakes feel to you going into this Lions-Rams quarterback battle of the X's?
Yeah, I mean, from the outside, but I really kind of felt like it was not a great matchup. You know, the Lions obviously are in a complete rebuild, trying to get their culture right. They've played well at times this season, but obviously haven't found a way to win. And the Rams, I think, are one of the best teams in football. So I wasn't expecting a great game from the outset. And I feel like every time I do that with the Lions, I feel like every time I'm expecting them to get blown out and I look at their record and I know they're struggling, but they really come and play. And it's kind of, they've been in a bunch of games this year for a 0-7 team at this point. They play tough and really hats off to them today. I thought they showed a lot coming out and playing the way they did. And they brought out, you know, all the stops, two fake punts today.
And a throw. The Lions breaking out everything. Jack Fox with a dart to the sideline. And it's a first down.
Onside kick.
And they go onside. The ball is loose and the Lions have it at the 47-yard line.
Oh, wow.
You know, I think they were doing everything they could to try to get the mojo on their side and really, you know, we're in this game up until the very, very end. And again, I thought Goff, for the most part, and the Lions played really, really well. Dan Campbell had this team prepared. I thought it was a great showing and another really disappointing loss, though, in the end.
You said you thought this was going to be a blowout, and because of the season the Lions have had, and it felt like they hit a low point last week because Goff was called out by his head coach, Dan Campbell, in the media. And he said that he thinks Goff needs to step up more than he has.
I will say this. I feel like he needs to step up more than he has. And I think he needs to help us, you know.
What does it mean for a coach to make a comment like that in public?
Yeah. You know what? I didn't love this last week when I heard it, to be honest. I do think there's a place sometimes to call out your quarterback, certainly the face of the team, at times, especially when it's appropriate. I think you have to know that the player, though, that you're calling out and the situation they're in. I think we've seen this in the past with Tom Brady, especially going to the Bucs, and we saw it last year with Coach Arians calling him out at times. But we're talking about maybe the great, you know, obviously the greatest quarterback of all time who, you know, firmly, you know, solidified in that position. This is a little different, I thought, with Jared, you know, coming over. He's still trying to find his footing. I thought it was a little unnecessary. There's a lot of problems going on right now for the Lions, and to single him out, I thought was a little unfair. And I was interested to see how he would handle it. And again, I thought he played really, really well today. I thought he played tough. And then two costly interceptions late in the game. And I thought they were both unnecessary. Looking at them, you know, they put together an amazing drive to go down and potentially take the lead late in the fourth quarter. And they'd been rolling and on second down in the red zone. He tries to stand in there and deliver a ball into the end zone and takes a shot from Aaron Donald and the ball flutters. And, you know, Jalen Ramsey comes up with the pick. And that was pretty much the game that the Rams iced it after that. And on the other side of the ball, the Rams were rolling it. You know, Stafford was dialed in. It was almost clinical on that side. He's got a ton of weapons around him and he utilizes all of them.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Matthew Stafford, it was a reunion for him too, facing the Lions after playing a dozen seasons in Detroit. And I think conventional wisdom tells us that he won the breakup, but what did today show you about the difference between Motor City Matthew and the Hollywood iteration?
Oh, I mean, I think to the fact that obviously quarterbacks get way too much credit for wins and, you know, way too much blame for losses. And that's never going to change. It comes with the territory. And, you know, not that Matthew didn't play great today. I mean, he played really solid game, but he's got a bunch of guys around him helping him make plays. He's got a defense that's really stable. You know, it's just not all on his shoulders, which I think we saw for the first decade of his career. I mean, we knew going out on the field that Matthew had to play amazing for them to have a chance to win. And I think you could see him carrying that around out there. he's in a position now where it doesn't have to be. He just has to go run the offense. I mean, Cooper Kupp continually does what he does. I mean, Robert Woods, I mean, their young receiver, Van Jefferson, went up and had an amazing touchdown catch today, helping out his quarterback. Higby, they got an elite tight end. I mean, DeSean Jackson didn't even catch a ball today, and they still made it look easy, explosive plays all over the place. You know, they got it going on. And obviously they have really good coaching too, not to leave that out. Again, I just didn't think it was a totally fair matchup for these two playing their old teams, but fun to watch nonetheless.
All right, we got to shift to another quarterback, and recording this on Sunday, but I can already hear the panic shouts of the Get Up and First Take crews as they try to explain what is going on with the Chiefs, because they were absolutely eviscerated by the Titans today, 27-3, and they are now 3-4. They've been turning the ball over for an alarming rate, and Patrick Mahomes threw an interception in his sixth straight game, the longest streak in his career. Defense couldn't get anything done either. So, Alex, what is happening in Kansas City?
I mean, this game, it was hard to watch. And, you know, obviously I'm a huge, huge Kansas City fan. I haven't played there and a ton of friends there. It was really hard to watch from the get-go. I mean, the Titans took the opening kickoff and marched it down the field and scored and didn't look back. And this Kansas City team, I feel like this entire year has been playing from behind, trying to catch up. They ran into a bit of a buzzsaw today. The Titans, I think, have got it going on. They're clicking right now on offense. Obviously, a lot of it starts with Derrick Henry and the way they're running the ball, but they've got some great counter punches off of it. I mean, it started with the first play of the game. They came up. Chiefs are looking to stop the run. They go play action pass, and A.J. Brown in behind, and they just kept it going all day, mixing it up. You know, obviously, had a great little wrinkle in there with the pop pass to Derrick Henry on the direct snap, and they were rolling. Ryan Tannehill was locked in. They had a great mix of run and pass. They really played great on that side of the ball and ran away with this. Titans, I think, rushed for literally the entire day and continued to get pressure, especially on third down. Obviously ended up knocking Patrick out of the game, but this was ugly. It was so ugly, CBS had to turn away from this. The Titans looked really, really good. I think they've definitely grown. When you look at offseason, obviously they lost their coordinator. They added Julio Jones. I think we saw some ups and downs earlier in the season, but this on a short week to beat the Bills and Chiefs back-to-back in 6 days the way they did was really, really impressive. So I think they've certainly thrown themselves right back in the mix in the AFC.
Okay. I mean, you kept using the words when you're talking about the Chiefs again and continued. Like, is it time to press the panic button in Kansas City?
Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of football left. They got to try to win. They got to win a ball game. They got to figure it out. It wasn't very good today. They got to figure out how to stop somebody on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, it's one thing I think to be giving up yards, but you can't constantly be giving up touchdowns in the red zone like the way they are. You can't always come back. And I think I feel like this team's pressing. You know, I see them out there pressing, especially on offense. You know, for 3 years now, we've seen them just make these incredible plays after plays, highlight real stuff. And I think defenses are daring them to go old school, conventional, and march length of the field. And I'm not sure they can at this point. It's really getting to them. And that offensive line isn't as improved as we thought at this point. And so they definitely have their work cut out for them. Not to say that I would never count them out. I mean, they're too talented of a team. Especially with Patrick back there, but they certainly got a long way to go right now.
I want to know, because you've been in that building, you've played for Andy Reid. What is he going to be saying? What are the conversations going to be like this week?
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you what he's not going to do. He will not press the panic button. Right. I mean, I know a lot of the media will. And I think that's what makes Andy such a great coach. I think this isn't about trying to do anything crazy different, about reinventing the wheel, about some dramatic change. I think it's really going to be a focus on all those guys to do it a little bit better. And we've seen them do it better, right? I mean, this exact crew obviously has won a championship and then went back last year. So it's not like they don't know how to win ball games, how to coach, how to play. Clearly, though, I think they're just off right now. And I think that's all. The margins are so small in this league. That's all it takes. So I think there really will be an emphasis on the details of everybody doing their job a little bit better, coaches included in that. And I think if they can find a way to get some momentum going, you know, they can obviously slowly try to get back into this, but it's going to take getting a win. I mean, it takes, you know, this week bouncing back and, you know, it's not going to help. They'll be on national TV trying to do it.
Up next, the first salvo was fired in what might be the rivalry in the AFC North for years to come.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, Alex, let's head to Baltimore where the Bengals and the Ravens battled for first place in the AFC North, something we might be seeing a lot of in the years to come. And in this 41-17 victory by the Bengals, it might be the biggest win the franchise has had in years. And I listened to you and Pablo, and I know you guys talk about statement wins. So what statement did the Bengals send to their division and the AFC today?
Man, I think they sent a huge statement to the entire league. This was a game that I, you know, was intrigued to watch. I didn't think it was going to obviously go the way it did. And the Bengals looked the part today. This was a huge, huge win on the road. Baltimore is one of the toughest places to play in the league, especially within the division. And to go in there and get a win, any win would have been great, but to win the way they did running away in the fourth quarter, I think really says a lot about the AFC North and it's still wide open. You know, everybody had the Ravens crowned AFC champs, the best team in the AFC, and to get beat at home like this, you know, obviously mixes things up. You know, the Bengals are, you know, have the tie-breaking lead in that division right now, and they looked the part. Today, they really did look like a complete football team. They played great team defense, and on offense, they had all the answers. This Ravens defense challenged them, just like we talked about last week when they challenged the Chargers and really dominated that game. They came up and challenged this Bengals offense, and man, they were ready for it.
Good blocking on the screws, Chase. Found it. Oh, there he goes! He had him in a blender, and he's off to the races. This will be six. What a play!
Joe Burrow, I thought, looked like anything but a second-year quarterback coming off of ACL reconstruction. He moved really, really well in the pocket, a lot of subtle movement. He was so calm, I thought, in the face of some real chaos that the Ravens were trying to create, and just continually delivered the ball downfield. And they got one of the premier playmakers in the NFL right now in Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, man, this guy is special. I'm not sure we've seen a big play receiver like this since maybe Randy.
Wow.
You know, I think with that kind of ability, I mean, he, outside the numbers, this guy's tough to guard. I mean, taking slants to the house, he just uncovers, and he did it versus every corner the Ravens had. And when you got a guy like that, you know, makes the defense declare, you know, the other guys off of it, their tight end. Uzomah had a huge day today. But Burrow, I thought, looked really, really good. A lot of kind of subtle movement within the pocket that really kind of reminded me of Brady, kind of Montana-ish, you know, a guy that moves well enough to continue to find, you know, a little more time, a little more space to deliver the ball downfield. And this is the best game I think we've all seen him play. He looked really, really good. And they did on defense as well. They pestered this Ravens offense. Lamar made some plays early, but especially in the second half, they were relentless. I think they had five sacks. They did a great job mixing it up as well on that side of the ball. And looked like a complete team.
All right, so Joe Burrow's giving you some Tom Brady Montana vibes, and Ja'Marr Chase is giving you some Randy Moss vibes, and that connection dominated the second half. But I remember the draft, and there was a lot made about the Bengals even taking this guy over Penei Sewell, a tackle out of Oregon who now plays for the Lions. So as a quarterback yourself, Alex, which one would you rather have? A wideout you know you have chemistry with, or someone who's going to help protect you?
Man, I mean, the truth is you need both in this league, you know. You got to have both. You have to have premier tackles. Every team's got defensive ends and edge rushers that can get after it. And then you need playmakers outside. And, you know, Ja'Marr Chase at this point looks elite in that sense. I mean, he looks like a difference maker out there. Every time they go to him and he uncovers, I don't care what the route is. I mean, the guy gets open, and there's something to be said about that. I think that's a rare talent that, certain guys have. He put on a show today. It was, you know, fun to watch. And the connection already that obviously those two old college teammates have, Burrow and him, fun to see them keeping it going here in the the professional ranks.
You know, we talked about Joe Burrow, but what this also was just a matchup of two of the great young quarterbacks in this league. And if Joe Burrow, like you said, mastered the nuances today against Baltimore, what did Lamar Jackson not do right today?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was so much of what Lamar did or didn't do. I really think he's improved on his ability. He is, you know, when he looks to run and he breaks out of the pocket, I mean, to have a guy with that kind of running ability, but now I think he's adding an element of keeping his eyes downfield, and he makes a ton of plays too. I see him as he moves towards the line of scrimmage, you know, threatening the run, but with his eyes still up and still layering the ball over the middle, hitting deep crosses, hitting people downfield. I mean, I think he is obviously a really, really special player, incredibly unique with his skill set. And I don't think it was so much him today. In the second half, I really think this Bengals team was impressive. They sealed this game off late in the fourth quarter with just running the ball, showing a ton of balance. Joe Mixon broke off a big run to seal it off. And then this Bengals defense, like I said, they came to play today. They had a great plan. You know, I got to play against them last year and remember walking away thinking how underrated they were, what a tough defense they were, how well coached they are. They play hard. They play fast. They know what they're doing, and it showed up today.
All right. The Titans, huge back-to-back wins, right? They beat the Bills in Monday Night Football. Now this, the Bills are still really good. And we just talked about the Bengals being awesome. How do you suss out the AFC picture right now?
You know, I'm kind of pumped that it's a bit of a mess. I think that's good for football. You know, the NFC is like that right now. I mean, I think there's four teams in the NFC, four or five teams that could end up running away with it. And I think that's amazing. That's what you want. I mean, we're only 7 weeks in of a 17-week schedule. So I love that the AFC, you know, a couple weeks ago, it was the Bills. You know, they're the best team. And then, you know, all of a sudden it really felt like the Ravens. But I think at this point, I love that the Titans are in there, the Bengals. Hopefully more to come and continue to, I think, to keep a deep field. I think it'll only make for better football, especially come November and December.
Okay, Alex, before we let you go, we were bombarded all day with something called National Tight End Day. It is a totally made up holiday invented by 49ers quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo and George Kittle and others. And I know seemingly every day, everybody gets a day, but is this something that's actually celebrated in NFL locker rooms?
This is the first year I've ever heard of this thing. I don't know where it came from. I guess, yeah, is that what did Jimmy Garoppolo and George Kittle invent this thing?
Allegedly. Our intrepid researchers tell me.
I never heard of it. Don't know what to make of it just yet. I do, you know, I don't mind the tight ends getting a little love. A lot of times they get overlooked. You know, they do a lot of dirty work too. You know, those guys, they kind of got to be a jack of all trades. Got to do a little bit of everything. You know, so I don't mind it. I don't mind it. I don't hate it. You know, I know they had their big tight end university thing this offseason, and all those guys got together. I'm sure I'm sure something happened there too with them planning this. But I think this is a great time for it. There are some amazing tight ends around the league right now. Guys that can do it all. And tight end is such a unique position for, you know, like especially young players come in. I think it's one of the hardest positions on offense to really adjust to. Because there's not a facet of the offensive game that they're not in. You know, obviously the passing game, they're in it. They got to be route runners. And oftentimes they get unique matchups. They're on safeties, they're on linebackers. And then a lot of these new time tight ends that you split out, opened up by themselves, they're on corners. So they really have to run routes against a lot of different body types and learn how to win in different ways. You know, but then they're in pass protection too. There's a lot of times you're bringing them in and now all of a sudden they're in pass protection. So they got to block defensive ends and edge rushers, and they got to know blitzes and how to do that as well. And then they're in the run game also, you know, and so they've got to know run game scheme. They got to know combo blocks with tackles and how to go up to safeties and things like that. So it's a tall task for these guys. They do a lot, and there's some fun ones to watch right now around the league. I'm lucky enough to have played with a couple. So don't mind them getting the love.
Well, those tight ends did show up on Sunday. I mean, Kyle Pitts, CJ Uzuma, Mike Gesicki, Hunter Henry, they all had touchdowns. And so did Zach Ertz, who wasted no time fitting in with his new team. And, you know, you said it, you played with a couple dynamic tight ends in your career, Kelce, as well as Vernon Davis in San Francisco. So your perspective is important here. What's the most critical factor when it comes to a strong tight end quarterback dynamic?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think the number one thing starts with communication, you know, and I think it goes back to all these nuances we kind of just talked about. I mean, tight ends are running routes against all these different guys, and they end up being different. If they're running a route against a corner, it's going to be different. If they're running a route against a linebacker, obviously it's going to look different. So I think communicating through all those kind of nuances and being on the same page so that obviously when you're out there between the lines that you don't have to, it's all, you know, nonverbal. You're seeing the same thing, reacting to it the same way. I think obviously nobody does it better than Gronk and Brady. We see it all the time, especially in the red zone, where these guys can be elite threats, you know, with their length and size down there. I think there is a little bit of a comfort sometimes that comes with having a great tight end. I know I felt that. You know, oftentimes, obviously, they're in the box with you in there. You can talk to them even at the line of scrimmage by name. You know, I think when you know, for me, I know oftentimes, especially with like Kelce, if I didn't know, unsure about a look or where I wanted to go with the football, he was a guy I could really kind of depend on to uncover. Or even if he was covered, I could offset throw him, and more often than not, he was going to make a tough catch. Yeah, I mean, I think it does kind of come back to that communication between QBs and tight ends and what they're seeing and seeing the same thing and reacting to it the same way.
All right, Alex, you do this so well. I have a new appreciation for tight ends and also what happened on Sunday. So thank you.
Emily, thanks. Yeah, good to be here.
I'm Emily Kaplan. This has been ESPN Daily. Pablo will be back to talk to you tomorrow.